Hey Trailblazers, this is Jason, your host of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. Before we jump into our latest episode, I've got some incredible news for you. Are you gearing up for your next big hike or backpacking trip? Well, we at Trailblazing Texas podcast have partnered up with Trekker Joe's, the ultimate Texas outfitter, to bring you something I feel absolutely special. Listeners, you of the Trailblazing Texas podcast can now get a one-time 15% off their gear purchases at Trekker Joe's. That's right. Whether you're a first-time customer at Trekker Joe's or a repeat customer like me, you can save big and hit the trails well-prepared. So upon checkout, use code TTP15 to claim your 15% discount and, in the process, support an amazing local Texas business. So happy trails, and don't forget to tell your hiking buddies. Now on with the episode. But wait, there's more. Before we get into our next episode, I just wanted to let you know of a company that I came across on my last backpacking trip to the Guadalupe Mountains. It's called Good Guad Land Company. And let me tell you, this is a hidden gem for Texas adventurers. Whether you're looking for a perfect base camp, wide open space to explore, or just a peaceful getaway under the Texas sky, Good Guad Land Company has you covered. So if you're heading to the Guadalupe Mountains and you can't get a campsite, definitely check them out. You can access their sites for booking on Hip Camp, but definitely I think it's worth the look. So now, on to the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast. I'm your host, Jason. And I know this is, I don't know what episode of this would be. This will probably be in the 40s. And I know every episode I say how excited I am. And I am. All my guests, I love them and so thankful. But today I am way excited. We have a true Texas hiking legend. And I think if you actually Googled Texas hiking legend right now, you would have a picture of our next guest. Kim, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, absolutely. And to the listeners, Kim and I have been looking to schedule this episode. Golly, it's almost a year since your through hike of the Lone Star hiking trail.
That's true.
And then you had a world tour of hikes that, you know, we kind of said, oh, maybe we can schedule here and there. And it seems like our paths have crossed. You have about a 2-week break before your next big adventure. So, you know, I thank you so much for reaching out to me. And not forgetting about the podcast and really, you know, allowing this to happen.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here. I like the way you interview people. So I figured, and plus, as you know, you helped me out. That's how we met. And so, it's kind of fun to be able to come back around to the hike that introduced us.
Yeah. And to the listeners, I believe that probably close to half the current episodes that are published, I've talked about you.
Oh my god.
And how we met. So to the listeners, this is the lady that swam across the San Jacinto River in one of the worst floods since I've been hiking on the Lone Star hiking trail that we've ever had. And in case you are new to the Trailblazing Texas podcast and episodes, I will definitely share this story to catch you up. So this past January, we are in 2024. I was turning 51 and I had through hiked the Lone Star hiking trail. And for some reason I decided that I wanted to do it in 3 days. So it's, you know, 30 plus miles a day. The trail is 96.4 miles. Longest trail in Texas. It's 128 miles-ish if you did all the loops. So that was the goal. And as we approached go time, we had an absolutely devastating flood. And, you know, it rains here a lot, and especially in the wintertime on the Lone Star Hiking Trail. It's a hit or miss. I was naive, and I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to go out and go ahead and cache my water for the hike, even though it's supposed to rain a lot. Like, okay, the trail will be wet, but I was just like, I didn't care. So I went out and cached all my water. So I had three drops. So we had the horrible rain. I believe there was one cache that I still had to make the day before I was going to start hiking. And I was driving out past Trailhead 7. You go under Highway 45, walk this road, and kind of like it turns back into the trail. And that whole road was underwater. So I was like, oh my gosh. So I made it to that little intersection where the trail starts, cached my water, came back, and then saw, okay, well, you know, it stopped raining. So I'm going to try it. And literally probably within an hour of me caching, there was another wave of the storm coming through at like 2 a.m. And so then, yeah, like at 3 a.m, I called it. You know, there's no way due to the flooding and stuff. So I don't know how long after that, Kim, you made a post on the Lone Star Hiking Trail that you were kind of passing through and, you know, you were going to through hike the Lone Star Hiking Trail and you had questions about the water. And so I messaged you and I'm like, you know, I think it was probably about 3 or 4 days after all this flooding, which the trail is still underwater. Correct. And Kim has videos to prove that. So I had messaged you and just said, look, I'm not sure if you would be interested, but I have caches, you know, at Stubblefield, you'd be able to get water. Then I have caches in these three other locations. You're more than welcome to use them, and if not, just let me know and I will come back and pick them up. And
yeah, I'm sure your users are asking right now, wait a second, how can you need water if it's flooding?
Yes,
my filter could not handle the silt of Texas, period. The first day it was bogged down. Like, I would do it differently next time, but I killed my filter on the first filter section.
Yeah, so. You have to pre-filter in this water.
Yes.
It was funny that, like, for me, okay, yeah, your filter failed, you're on trail, you needed some water. And at that moment, yeah, I'm like, here are my caches. And then, like, I don't know how much longer after that, it dawned on me, like, oh man, like, you have to cross the San Jacinto River. And there's a good chance, because of the flooding, that there's going to be no, like, down trees perfectly across the river where you can kind of shimmy across. And even just normal summer where it's not very high, it's still dangerous. I mean, there's you know, crap in the water, there's just debris, there's metal sometimes. And so I think when you had announced that you finished the hike, I messaged you and like, hey, how did you get across the San Jacinto River? And you're like, oh, I just swam it. I was like, what?
Oh my gosh.
So just tell us about that experience. Like, when you came to the river.
Yeah. Okay. So first off, I don't do a lot of research before I do a hike, obviously. But on this one, I knew about crossing the San Jacinto. So when I got to it, I was ready. I got there and I had been walking through water the whole time. So to me, it was not going to be anything different, except when I got to it, it was the first significant river that I got to, and it was brown and it was wide. And so I'm like, all right, someone said somewhere that there was a tree that it fell over and you can, like you said, shimmy across it. So, and they had said, I thought downstream. So I go downstream, I can't find it. I go upstream, I can't, I'm looking everywhere. I find things that look like it could have been it, but they were kind of covered in water a little bit. And I don't, I would rather cross a stream without a tree. I don't want to have it, you know, what they call, I think strainers, or I can't remember what they call them, but the things you don't want to get caught in, because right. then you're in trouble. And there was a good current. So I spent at least 30 minutes, which doesn't sound like that much time, but it was near the end of the day. And I'm walking up and downstream trying to figure this out. The good news is I was also assessing, okay, if something bad happens, where's my backpack going to go? Where am I going to go? And the reason I say those are separate is because I have crossed a lot of streams, typically a little cleaner and clearer than this one. And I always unbuckle my backpack. I have this little routine I do. But this one actually had me a little bit higher concern. So what I ended up doing was I have dry bags. I took everything I had, including my shirt, and I put it all in the dry bag. And then I actually put air in the dry bag. So it's kind of like a little bit buoyant. And then I unbuckle my backpack. Now, the mistake that I made was I've never been swept by a river ever. That's never happened. So it wasn't in my realm of possibilities. So I had my poles so that I wouldn't fall over. I'll be if I didn't take the first step and it was okay. The second step, and I am up to my shoulders. Now my backpack is floating. It's still attached to me. And I have one of two choices. I'm already in the current. And you really only have a few choices. And so I actually was able to, when I realized I was in trouble, I was able to push against the bank because that's how steep it was. So it got me in the right. If you know water, the water, you don't go upstream and you don't fight it, you go with it. And so I just kept swimming across to the other side. And thankfully there were roots on, and it literally was a straight wall. And I remember I just hung on for a little bit. My backpack is kind of almost above my head, but above the water. My hands have the poles, which is bad. I mean, if you've ever tried to swim with shoes and poles, the good news is I didn't have my shirt on, so I wasn't bogged down by my clothing. Mm-hmm. So I get to the other side, I'm hanging on, I catch my breath. Like, I'm like, all right, I'm okay. But the last thing I want to do is be hasty getting out and then get back into the water. Now I knew I was okay. If I went down the stream a little bit more, I had walked down there, it kind of forked a little bit, so I could have forced my way. So I wasn't too worried about that, but I was ready to get out. It was cold. The weather, the sun was going down, and I had like at least another hour, if not more, hiking wet. So anyway, I made it to the other side. I actually did a video afterwards, and you can hear in my voice, I'm like, I don't normally breathe hard, and I was breathing hard, and I was so thankful to be on the other side. And I'm like, okay, we're on the other side, we're good. But then I'm looking around and it's literally a floodplain. Like you can see where everything has been.
Yes.
In the last few days, high. I mean, like I crossed a bridge that was pretty high above the water and it had debris from the flooding water. So I told myself, you're not stopping. You're going to keep walking until you are confident you are out of the flood zone, because anything can happen.
Absolutely.
So I did. I hiked until dark. It probably wasn't my best setup, but it looked like an old road. And so I set up my tent. Some silly wild pig had happened to walk by right when I was setting up my tent. And I'm like, okay, you didn't see that. Forget it was there. And then I am, because pigs in our farm were pretty aggressive. So I was not very, I'll take a bear over a pig any day. Anyway, mm-hmm. All my stuff's wet. I have dry clothes inside, you know, my tent, but everything else is wet. And I'm like, well, maybe it'll dry, but I was pretty sure it wouldn't. I hung it all up for airflow and what everything else. And the next morning I had put all my wet clothes on and I hiked out. I basically made the decision that I was not going to spend another night on the trail. And so I hiked, I think, I don't know how many miles, 20 something, you know,
yeah.
And I just hiked until I was done. And little did I know that was not, I had another river crossing and everybody else is like, well, that's not normally there. Like, 'cause there was a bridge. But I couldn't get to the bridge because of this evidently new flow because of the flooding. So I remember after that one, I knew that the San Jacinto was coming one more time. And I, on a video, I you haven't seen it, but I basically said, I'm calling this. If there's a road nearby and I have to cross that river one more time, I said, I've tested fate twice. I'm not going to test it again. And so sure enough, I get there and there's this beautiful bridge across the San Jacinto. And you can, again, I haven't posted this yet, but you can hear my relief, like, oh my gosh, I can do this. And so then I hiked in water till the end, but I that of all the trails that I've done, this was kind of a filler trail. I was doing it because I was in Texas. I was waiting to pick up someone. I had 5 days. Why not? No preparation. I knew it was going to be flat because it's Texas. I mean, the high point was a joke. I loved it. The high point was like, I think on my second day, and it was 300 and
something,
you know, so there was no real elevation change other than going up and down the streams, but the walking through the water, the weather was perfect other than it rained on me in the middle of it. So I got there right after a flood and I went back on after 2 days of heavy rain. And the ground was just saturated. It couldn't take any more. So, oh, and I found quicksand on your trail.
Oh, really?
Oh, my gosh. It was my fault. I started at 3:30 in the morning and because I was trying to get off the trail. And this was like the third day or something. And I was trying to meet someone to get off to avoid this downpour rain that was going to come. And I started really early and I missed a turn just by a hair. I mean, like, it was already dark, obviously, but anyway, all of a sudden, I've never had this happen. I've been in quicksand before, but I've never been in a situation where I really needed my shoe and my shoe came out in the mud.
Oh.
And I reached down without even thinking and I got it before it became, invisible.
Yeah.
And I pulled it up and I'm like, oh my gosh, what have I just done? And so I got my shoe on. You walk through so much water that the mud was a no, never mind. But that was a wake up call for me.
Yeah.
Plus we had spiders everywhere. Like their little eyes glow in the dark, like the little green eyes.
Oh, there's a bazillion.
Oh my gosh. Like the whole ground was glowing at me. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I don't mind spiders. I'm like, how many am I stepping on? You know, because.
Yeah.
And then of course they always like to build their, you know, little web across the trail. But anyway, so the trail surprised me and I actually loved it. The water didn't bother me. I grew up in Wheelock, Texas, which is kind of near Franklin, Texas, which is kind of near College Station, Texas. And that's what I grew up in. Like my sister and I played in those creeks. We like, it was home, you know, and I hadn't done a hike like that in so long, you know, I don't even know what my last hike before that was, you know, but they're usually in the desert. Most of my time was spent in the desert. So this was just such a different experience. And ticks, you know, the ticks and just the.
Yeah, I've got ticks and hogs are my phobia. And the Lone Star Hiking Trail have both.
It does. I actually just looked at a video that I took where the whole trail was rooted up because of the pigs and I could hear them. They were all around me, you know, so. Yeah, they're of concern because the rooting can actually be dangerous if you want, you know, you're walking on solid ground and then boom, you know, you found a hole. So anyway, it was a good trail. I didn't see, let me think about this. There was not one single hiker on the trail. Huh. That's interesting. I just thought about that. I didn't see a single hiker. And when as a solo hiker, I actually like to hike solo, but I like to have other hikers around coming and going.
And so, that should tell you something about the storm that you were hiking between and yeah, right after.
I just had this little window of opportunity.
Yeah.
So, it was more epic than I could have ever imagined. And that photo you sent me where the river looked normal, I cannot believe it.
So to the listeners and to yourself, like, you know, that picture that I sent you, it's the San Jacinto, if it's in it, you know, just the bank walls, you don't just really kind of walk down to it. I mean, there's, you know, where the trail goes through it, like you can get down to it, but it's drop off.
Yeah. I had no idea.
It's probably about 12 feet from the top to the bottom, and to get across there where you were at, golly, that's probably what, 20 yards, 25 yards easy to have to swim across that. So you're lucky that your first step, you were able probably to catch yourself a bit, even though it went up to your shoulders, because I cross it on a through hike or on a low day if I'm section hiking.
Yeah.
But something like that, I would just stop and then just turn back because.
So it was funny because there's a reroute or a bypass. But the first thing it says is, you know, you got to have confidence in your
navigation.
So I'm like, I'm looking across and I see a little blaze and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, because everything's so flooded. I'm like, I felt like because I had walked where I was going to float, if I floated down the river and there was no waterfall, there was no tree that was going to strain me and catch me, I felt confident. Even if it was 50 feet, I still felt confident that I would make it to the other side. And I know that sounds scary, but that was less scary to me. Remember, I was also running out of daylight, and I wasn't confident that I was going to get out of the floodplain. So I had a whole bunch of things that I was weighing out. And I think this is definitely to people that are listening. You know, people tell you, they get on videos and they tell you, okay, this is what you should do, and this is how you should do it. And this is, and people need to realize, if I could give you any advice, it was, you need to learn how to make decisions that work best for you at that moment. Stay calm. Yeah. Don't act out of fear. Don't be afraid to go backwards. Like, that was one of my options, was to go back where I came from. You know, in baby steps, you know, if you've never done a river crossing ever, that would probably not be a good choice. But if you have done river crossings, I've never swam across one. I did not expect me to, I expected it to be gradual. You know, it did catch me off guard, but I had done all this stuff before I stepped on that first step. How did I prepare my backpack, my clothing? You know, the only thing I messed up on was my poles. That was the one thing that was swimming with poles in my hands was not as easy as if I had been just free to swim across. But, you know, I knew, I understand water, and it can be scary. Because again, you said there's hazards under there. Well, okay, so I was lucky. Well, what if there had been a buried bridge? What if there had been a, you know, so there are many things that worked in my favor. So I'm not saying I did it right. I did what I had to do, especially once I got thrown into the situation. But I really tried to go around it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and it's funny that you say that. To me, and I think there's even been studies about this, the most, when you get into these types of situations, the very first decision you make is the most important. And if that is a correct decision, the percentages for you to continue making correct decisions, you know, are way greater than if you make a wrong decision and now you're reacting because, you know, shit hits the fan. And don't panic, think about everything and make that decision. I think it's probably the most important decision that you can make in such types of situations. And so, like, for this episode, this is the reason why I wanted to get into podcasting. People like you, the inspiration that you bring, the storytelling. And I think this is, I always feel stupid saying this, but I still think that there is a thought that women can't hike and backpack, or women can't do solo stuff. Or, you know, when you talk to women, that they don't believe that they can. And like, having someone like you on the podcast, it's so inspirational to just share your experiences, tell your stories, and to allow people to say, yes, you can. Yeah. I'm stoked about this. So, you know, we kind of talked, I definitely would love if you ever want to come back to actually talk about the individual trails that you've done and kind of reminisce about some of that stuff. But like, I want to use this episode and, you know, we'll definitely, hopefully we'll get up to like, you know, 3 hours of just great information, but I want to get to know you as a hiker and just kind of talk about some of the things, like how you identify trails, how you research, just really understanding your process. And I think really to kick this off, just give us maybe the last 4 or 5 years a roll call of everything that you've done. And so everybody's going to, after this, go, oh my God, she is a legend.
So it's funny you said 4 to 5 years, because believe it or not, it's only been 4 years. My big hike was 2020, the Appalachian Trail. I did some other things before that, but there were little things, and they were BK mostly before I had kids, and just they were little piddly things that you would do, like a trip. Somebody would lead a trip to a 14er in Colorado. Okay, sure, we'll go. And so to step out on the Appalachian Trail, and I will definitely answer all your questions about preparing, but I will tell you, I'm probably not a resident expert. I'm probably the most fly by the seat of your pants kind of person, but I will answer all the questions as honestly as I can. But just know that my way may not be the best way for everyone. Okay. So the Appalachian Trail, I literally got on that trail and I set up my tent for the first time on the first night. That's not a good sign.
Wait, stop. So, and we're going to get into this, but you just said, I want to do the AT.
Yes, I do have a story on what I mean, I was already thinking about doing it, but a friend called me up and basically told me she had cancer. And it was a very, it was a person that was very close to me. And I can't even explain. It's probably one of my few family friends. Like, she's family, but she's really a friend anyway. But when she called me up to tell me that, and she said, she's always wanted to, I said, hey, I got a secret for you. And she's like, what? And I said, I want to do the Appalachian Trail. And she basically said, go, 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 go. And then she comes back into my story in 2022. So I will talk about that later, but here's my rundown. Right. So 2020 Appalachian Trail. That's a big one. It took me 154 days. That was 2020. So I had like this little pandemic thing that happened. I got on the trail before the pandemic. I had no idea the world was going to shut down, but they closed the national park. So I got off the trail. Okay. So that was a pretty crazy way to do a through hike because nobody had experienced anything like that before ever. Everything was shut down. Like, there were shelters shut down, hostels. There was no trail magic. So 2020 was really an epically amazing year for me when everybody else, I'm afraid, was really struggling with survival. But I had already quit everything. So it wasn't like COVID didn't change my life. Like, in that respect, I had already made some decisions at the last minute. But anyway, so that's 2020. So then 2021, I thought I had settled down. I moved to Florida after the hike. I tried to work again because the world was all weird. But I ended up realizing when my friend, actually, so it was 2021, my friend called me up. So it was only a year later. Oh, and she basically said that she's on terminal hospice. And I said, can I come see you? And she said, yes. So I flew, I spent some time with her. When I made it back to Florida, I basically quit my job and I bought a van and I headed off. And so one of the things, and this has to do with hiking, so in my van, it provided the freedom to do these things, but I decided I needed some touch points while I was driving around in my van, some focus. And so I wanted to do all the high points in each state and do the national parks, but I didn't want to do the 63 national parks. I didn't want to just drive through them. I didn't want to just go to the visitor center. I wanted to breathe them in. So camp, morning, you know, sunrise, sunset, really take it in. So that was my goal for 1 year in the van. When I did that, hikes would come up, like the Trans Catalina Trail. If you haven't done that, I actually recommend that to people. If there's something about hiking on an island, but there's also something about camping on a beach, and there's something about it being a short through hike. So if you ever want to do a through hike, I think that's a really good one to start with. And there's bison on the island. Then I went to do, someone ran into my van accidentally. And so I need to get my van fixed. Why am I telling you this? Because, well, I started looking at hikes and I needed a 2 week hike. I was on the California side. I'm like, well, I think the John Muir Trail sounds great. So people go, you couldn't just get a permit like that. Well, yeah, you can. So I got a permit. I actually did two permits because I wanted to do Half Dome, and I had to break it into two permits to get it. Anyway, I was able to get the permit and I did the John Muir Trails. I dropped my van off. I had a ride to the top of the trail. I walked back to my van. It was ready in 2 weeks and I had a wonderful hike of the John Muir Trail. And that's about 220 miles. Then it's not really hiking, but I was able to go on a rafting trip for 80 miles and that was great, but I was listed as a missing person. So that was kind of fun. Then Knife's Edge, you can come back to that later. Knife's Edge Katahdin, that's a short hike, but it's a one that when I did the Appalachian Trail, you don't do the Knife's Edge. So I wanted to come to Katahdin from the other angle. It was wonderful. And then Isle Royale, I went there twice. The first time I did it, so you can camp. It's one of our national parks, which is why I went. But I loved it so much, and I wanted to hear the wolves and see more moose. And so I did the Isle Royale, which is up near Lake Superior. And then what else? Mount Rainier. That's my only failed summit, but it's probably one of my biggest accomplishments. They actually pulled us off the hike because it was too late in the season. And this one crevasse that you don't have to even, you don't even know it's there at the beginning of the season. By the end of the season, they keep adding ladders. And I think it was up to 3 ladders. And when we went, they pulled it. They said, nope, nobody else is going past this. So, but it still was a great experience. And I was trying to do one of my hikes. And then I ended up doing 40 out of the 50 high points in 1 year. So,
jeez.
Yeah. So I had 10 left, but I did 40 of them in 1 year living in my van. So then you come to 2023 and oh my gosh, they finally opened up Havasupai and I've always wanted to go there. That's the one with the blue waters in Arizona that people talk about. And I went, and I was one of the first people, like it opened in February and I went in February, like the beginning of February. And to be there, especially knowing that nobody had been there outside of their tribe, you know, it was amazing. So I did that. And then I kind of got stuck. I had this weird, so I sign up for things without thinking about them. There's this thing called the 52 Peak Club in Las Vegas. And this 52 Peak Club looked fun. You get a deck of cards by the time you're done. So every hike you get a card. That sounds right up my alley. That sounds like fun. The problem is I was going to have to hike with other people because you have to do it with a trip leader. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to stretch and grow and I'm going to do this. I fell in love with these people, but they were hard hikes, scary, like rock scrambles, ropes, exposure. I actually fell and hit my head. It's the only injury I've ever had, really. And holy cow. I mean, like just like it split my head open. Anyway.
Oh my gosh.
That was a big deal. So that was a 52 Peak Club. I was going to do it because 52 peaks, 52 days. I gave myself 2 months. To do it. Well, you got to sign up with the people and there's snow and all this. Anyway, I ended up being there for like, I would have to leave Vegas and come back to finish my hikes. But anyway, I finished it in like 5 months or something like that. Yeah. And maybe 4. And they were just freaking out that I finished it. Cause most people work on it for like years.
Yeah.
I'm like, you guys don't understand. I got to go. I got stuff to do. So anyway, so I did that. So then I decided before I left the Vegas area, I went to California and did Cactus the Cloud. I don't know if you've heard of that, but that's supposed to be the hardest day hike. And it's because I think you climb like, you do 10,000 elevation in like 20 miles or something like that. Anyway, you start in the Palm Springs area and you from the desert floor and you go all the way up to San Jacinto, of all things, San Jacinto Peak. I think that's right. Machu Picchu. I then had an opportunity. Someone posted on Facebook. This is my planning. Someone posted on Facebook that there was an opening next week for a Machu Picchu hike. And if anybody wanted to go, there's this weird opening. Sounds like me. So I made it from one coast to the other, drove to Florida because I left my van there. And I drove. Thankfully, my friends let me park their vehicle and they took me to the airport. But I hopped on a plane and all of a sudden, a week later, I'm in Peru about to do the Inca Trail. So that's how that came about. And it was a great price. So I did the Inca Trail and I did, so Machu Picchu is actually not that high up. It's like 8,000 feet. But then I also did, and I did Huayna Picchu, which is behind it, which is another 1,000 or so. But then I did Rainbow Mountain. And that's the first time I think I've ever had altitude sickness, I think. And it was like around 16,000 feet up. So I'm a little excited about my hike coming up, but we'll see. Camino de Santiago. I already had that planned because I was meeting a friend for a cruise, a family friend. And so I was like, okay, well, if I'm already going to be in Italy, why not do the Camino de Santiago a month before that? So that's what I did. So I flew literally to Madrid, took a train, made it to this place called Irun, and I did the Del Norte. I didn't want to do the most popular route because there would be too many people for me. So I did the Del Norte and I wanted to carry my tent. And if you know anything about a Camino, most people do not carry a tent.
Yeah.
Some people have this idea that it's illegal to camp in Spain. As with everything, whatever you guys hear, don't take it for face value. Don't take me for face value. Do your own research. What I found was, yes, you're not allowed to camp in someone's yard. You're not allowed to set up a tent on the outskirts of a town, but you can stay at a formal campground. The Del Norte, they have surfers. They have surfer camps on the beach. It was the most amazing Camino. But as I was doing it, I got to this one point where I made a decision. And I literally told people the day before that I was doing the Del Norte. And I got to this decision point where you could go left to the Primitivo. And I thought Primitivo meant primitive. permissive. This is the lack of my research. Primitivo means first. It was the first Camino. Anyway, I decided I wanted to go to the Primitivo instead of keeping on the Del Norte because it was going to go into the cities. And so I took a left. So everyone I told the day before, I made a decision at that point to go left. And that's why you don't make reservations, because then you can be flexible and fluid. So I did the Del Norte to the Primitivo. Then I was way early and I had a flight already arranged, which is why you don't book your flights. I don't book flights ahead of time anymore. And so I had like 5 days. I'm like, oh, I have time. So I did this crazy 100 kilometer thing to the, you go past Santiago and you go to Muxia, which is the coast. And then you go to Finisterre. And then I caught a bus back to catch my flight. I did it in 3 days. Now, that's insane. But I was already feeling good. And so I made it 2 days to one. I wanted to watch the sun rise in Muxia. And then I wanted to watch the sun set in Finisterre because they're both known for those things. And I did. And so it was great. Anyway, so that was, no, let's see, that's 2023. And we're talking about 900 kilometers there total. Then this, it was funny. I went through my notes thinking about what hikes I've done. And I forgot one of my favorite ones of all. A friend invited me to go hike Mount St. Helens. They had scored a permit and they wanted to know if I wanted to go with them. It was someone I met on the Appalachian Trail. And I'm like, yeah. So I did this hike and that was a really cool one. I wasn't prepared for it to still be steaming and the weather was perfect. And I felt strong and it was a really good hike. And then I went back to Havasu Pie in November. I decided to go see it in the fall and I'm not upset. I'm glad I did. I could see how much work they had done to this place over that season. So I know some people are not a fan of Havasu Pie. They've never been. I promise you, if you stop listening to people and you go, you will find that the things that people are very loud about, like the treatment of the horses and the mules, I didn't see that. And I'll be honest, the first time I didn't look because I didn't know. The second time when I went in November, I really looked at the animals and they seemed fine. The tribe people were so unbelievably awesome, like kind. So anyway, all I can say is if you have a very strong opinion about something, base it on your own experience and not what you read on the internet, because I think people's intentions are good, but I think they're, you know, when people tell me you can't take a tent to do the Del Norte, yet they've never done the Del Norte. People tell me, you know, this is happening. Just, I guess, people need to just see it for themselves, in my opinion. Okay, so then you come to 2024. If you had asked me a year ago right now what I was going to do in 2024, I would have told you two things. I had a very profound impact on my life when I did the Del Norte to Primitivo. And that was, I felt like I was supposed to invite friends to come with me. So I made a commitment a year ago and I posted it on Facebook. I made it official and I said, October 1st, I'm going to be back in Santiago and I'm going to do Santiago to Muxia Finisterre. Anybody wants to come with me, I will go slow. I will help carry stuff, but I feel like I'm supposed to, if you've always said I want to do this and you were afraid to go, I will take you there. Don't tell me when you're going. I don't care what flight you're taking. Just show up October 1st.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was my plan. Well, okay. So I know I'm going to be in Spain. Oh, and there was a wedding I had to go to in November. That was it. That was my plans a year ago for 2024. So here's how 2024 played out. As you know, so a friend of mine, I went on a trip and I ended up being in Texas because we went to Mexico for a ladies' trip celebrating someone's birthday. So I'm in Texas and I want to do something for my sister. So I planned this little thing and I have this like gap. And then I'm picking up a friend at an airport. So those are two things. And that's actually not quite how it went. Okay. The way it happened was my friend, I was going to pick them up at the airport and I was going to take them to go do something. And they couldn't come. And it was something that I thought my sister would like. And so my sister actually, but the window was still the same window. So I thought, why not the Lone Star Trail? I'm there. It's only 93 miles. And I know 93 sounds big for some people, but to me, 93 miles is not big, especially because I figured it was flat. And I actually figured it would be about a 4-day hike. That was my plan. And I had 5 days. So that's what I did. I hopped on the trail. I had a friend who wanted to do it later. So they dropped me off at the trail. And then I met someone who picked me up off the trail when it was flooding. And actually, they picked me up and then someone got me back on the trail. And so I just kind of made it up as I went. I didn't have any plans. I parked my van at the trailhead And when that second storm came, I really lucked out because the trees were falling apart from this storm. And when I took my van away and I slept at a truck stop, and then I came back to the trail to finish my hike, there were branches everywhere my van was. So just, even though you think about your safety on the trail, I actually ended up saving my van by not staying parked on the trailhead. Anyway, side note. So after the Lone Star Trail, this friend that was flying in, and we were going to do 2 weeks on the road trip, I had met them on a cruise, because when I finished my, when I finished my hike in Spain, my pilgrimage, I went to that little cruise with my friends. And instead of flying back to the US, I took another cruise, and it was a transatlantic. I met someone on that. They were fun. I said, hey, you want to go do some stuff with me? So we got on the van in Texas, and we drove all over the US, and I showed them for 2 weeks all this stuff. But the ultimate end of this wonderful time with my friend was he was going to drop me off at the bottom of Arizona to do the Arizona Trail. So that's what we did. And it was great because then I got dropped off. We left my van at a friend's house. And so, because the hardest part of a thru hike, if no one knows this, is getting on the thru hike and getting off of the thru hike.
Yep.
And it's so much easier to stay on the trail. But the logistics are unbelievable. Anyway, so I was able to do the Arizona Trail. That should be a podcast in its own, because that was the closest I've ever thought about not actually making it.
Really?
Yeah, there was and some of it was my fault, but basically my tent failed on a surprise snowstorm. I knew it was going to snow. I made it up and over what I thought was a snow line, but it turned out to be not only a bigger storm, but a longer storm. And I was 40 miles from any civilization. So it was up to me to self-rescue, you know, to get myself out of there. Whole nother story. I ended up meeting someone, and we stayed together until we got out to safety. So I did have someone with me after the first day. And I know what day it was because it was my birthday. Okay, so that's 2024. Then let's see, what else? Someone invited me to go to Bali. And so I said, sure. So it's someone I met over TikTok of all things. And she's a great adventurer, solo traveler. You would actually really enjoy her. And but she travels in her car and she just does these crazy epic trips, and she loves Indonesia. So she's like, I'm going to be here. She actually said, I'm here. Come see me. And I said, okay. So I got a ticket. I bought a one-way ticket. And then again, my lack of planning, I'm not dogging on myself, but I laugh at my, the way I flow through things and how it always works out, but it's ridiculous. You can't buy a one-way ticket to Bali. They won't give you a visa. You have to have an exit. They won't let you just go to Bali. So I looked at the map. And she was going to be there for 2 weeks. She had already been there for, I think, 2 weeks. But with me, we were there for 2 weeks. And I looked at the map and I'm like, Australia, never been there before. But now I'm on to the whole visa thing. And I'm like, they wanted an exit as well. So I then came up with this crazy idea. And I booked pretty quickly a flight from, I was in Australia doing hikes and other things. So my hiking, the big hike I did in Indonesia, I'll just close that one out, was you go up this volcano and into a crater, and it's called Ijen, I think. But basically it has the blue flames. So you go down this volcanic cone, and then you have to wear gas mask. And that was an epic hike. Like, there were too many people for me. If I ever go back, I will do it on my own, or at least with one guide, and convince them that I want to do it at midnight and not when everybody else is there. But other than that, it was amazing. When it erupts, you can't breathe. So you have these gas masks. Anyway. Loved it. That was actually not even in Bali. It was Indonesia, but it was Java. So it was the island next to Bali. I don't know the islands that well until I visit. So anyway, I made it to Australia, did some great hikes there. One was called a gorge, Carnarvon Gorge, and that was fantastic. So that was a great hike. Then I made it to, it was funny, I needed to get to, I decided I wanted to do my last, or not my last, one of my last national parks, which is Samoa, American Samoa. And I'm like, well, you know, and then Hawaii is on the way to the US, even though that is the US mainland. So I was like, okay, so why not book Samoa to Hawaii back to the US? Well, it turned out that it cost less to fly to New Zealand and then Samoa than it did to go from Australia. So I went from Australia to New Zealand, and that was supposed to be, I was just going to hang in a hotel for a week and just relax. I got a rental car for $80. I found I could get to the bottom of the island on one tank of gas. And so I did. I just drove to the bottom of New Zealand, and then I worked my way back to the hotel, back to the airport, back to the, and the, it turned out to be one of my most amazing adventures. New Zealand blew me away. So now I catch a flight to Samoa, and there's a problem, and this is my lack of paying attention to details. Samoa doesn't help me a bit. I need to be in American Samoa. Those are two separate islands, two separate countries. Like, one's American, one is not. So I had to catch a ferry. No problems around the 4th of July. I was going to book a ferry, but I couldn't do it online. Their website was not great. So I show up in Samoa, and the very next morning, it's Tuesday. I go straight to the terminal to buy my ticket for Thursday, because they only go once a week on Thursday. And they look at me, they're like, that's a holiday. We don't have a ferry. Now, I have a flight from American Samoa to Hawaii, so I've got to get to American Samoa. And I looked at them, I'm like, when's the next one? They're like, Thursday, the next Thursday. So, and there is a flight that you can book maybe, but I'm in this whole, I want to go across the date line and all the silly stuff. And I'm like,
don't say you swam.
I almost swam. No, I'm kidding. I looked at them, I'm like, what can I do? They said, well, we do have this one tonight. I'm like, what? I mean, like, why did you not start with that? And they're like, well, we have one tonight. And I'm like, but it's full. And I'm like, oh, that's why they didn't tell me. I'm like, so I go to the docks. They said there is a chance. Evidently, because I had an American passport, somehow, I don't know. I don't care how it worked out. All I know is that I gave this lady my passport. She said, come back here. I paid $100 or something. She said, come back here at 5. That's all I got. So I go, I'm like, I have one day to enjoy this island. So what did I do? I'm walking away from the terminal thing. And I said, I saw a guy, he was sitting in the shade, and he was a taxi. And I looked at him, I said, do you want to work today? And he said, yes. I said, okay, I've got basically 6 hours. Show me your island. So he did. He took me and we saw everything. I went snorkeling. I went swimming. I did all this stuff. I then packed all my stuff. I had paid for a hotel for 4 days, or Airbnb. But I didn't care. Like, so I gathered all my stuff. I went to the docks. It was total chaos. The guy, big guy, like straight out of the movies, was saying stuff to people only in their language. So I have no idea what he's saying. And I'm just standing there. I kind of made friends with this girl who was a solo traveler. She could have been my daughter. And we just kind of stayed together. And for whatever reason, I just kept staring at this guy as he was talking. And finally he sees me and I'm like, dude, I have no idea what you're saying. He comes over, he takes my passport, and then the girl throws her passport at him. She was like, I'm following you. He takes it, he gives it to the lady behind the counter. She stamps it, she does something. He's like, go. We don't ask questions, because you have to
understand. Oh, man.
So we get on the boat. We're one of the first people to get on the boat. I don't know what happened. A lot of people did not get on the boat. Okay, I don't understand their process. But we got on the boat. We actually had a place to sit. Most people were laying outside on the ground, and it's an all night thing. Like, this is a, you get, we were on the boat for 4 hours before it even took off. It left at midnight, and then we got there at 9 a.m. the next day.
Oh gosh.
And there was a date line change. So we were, I lived the same day twice. Okay. So now I'm on American Samoa, and I was able to book a place to stay. For some of my time, but not all of it. They kicked me out. Anyway, long story short, I made it to Hawaii. Hawaii was amazing. I did hikes around Hawaii. I can't even say all the hikes I did, but I got to the highest point there. So that checked another thing off my list. I did the two national parks. And then where did I end up? I came back to the U.S. Yeah, I came back to the U.S. And then I had this opportunity. A friend invited me to be in part of a dragon boat race, and it was up in Wisconsin. So I drove up to Wisconsin after a whole bunch of other stuff, drove up to Wisconsin. I'm in the U.S. for 1 month. So here I am in this boat, dragon boat race. So I'm doing that. And I'm like, oh, I'm so close to Isle Royale. So I decided to do a through hike. And this time I went by plane, and they dropped me off at one side of the island. I walked across to the other side of the island, got on my plane, and came back. So when I booked this flight, and I literally did it like 2 days before I left, the guy's like, and I was going to do it for 3 days. And the guy's like, he's like, I'm not questioning your ability. This is the pilot. He's like, I'm not questioning your ability, but you do realize that you're going to hike that island in less than 48 hours. I'm like, no, I'm doing 3 days. Well, he dropped me off at 3 p.m. and he picked me up at 2 p.m. Yes, on the third day, but it was 48 hours. I mean, he was right. I'm like, huh. I'm like, I got it. No problem. Because I'd already booked it, you know? And so sure enough, you know, I had to be a little focused, but it was actually very doable in that, you know, time frame. Because it's like, I don't remember the miles, 40-ish miles. Okay. So now I have this Camino thing that I've committed to. And all of a sudden I'm like, you know, I'm already over there. Why not do something else? And people keep telling you when you hike, they keep telling you about other hikes. And Tour du Mont Blanc, a friend of mine had done it. And I like her. I love her, actually. And she's a friend in Vegas. I'm like, you know what? I'm doing it. I'm going to go. I'm going to fly to Geneva. Because I asked her. I wrote her. I said, hey, where do I fly into if I'm going to do Tour du Mont Blanc? So then, like, right before I'm doing it, we're talking about days, I talk to my friend on the phone. I'm like, hey, tell me all about your trip. Tell me what I need to expect. She's like, Kim, I went with my work. It was a work trip. We would hike for a few hours and then they would drive us to the next spot. And then we would work.
Oh, and man.
And I'm like, oh, you didn't do it solo? And she's like, no. And I'm like, okay, well, no problem. I've got my tent. I'm already on my way. Like, that was my one, you know, phone a friend.
Yep.
So I get there, come to find out. So it is probably the most unbelievable hike. It really is. And you don't have to do it tenting. You can do these things that they call refuges. But I did my tent, which I loved. Lots of up and down. Like, first time my knees have hurt since the Appalachian Trail. Like, I haven't had knee pain until Tour du Mont Blanc. Like, because it's not, I don't have a problem going downhill. But when you go downhill for, I'm not exaggerating, 2 to 3 hours nonstop, my knees hurt. I happened to do it during their marathon. One day, 2,000 trail runners passed me.
Oh.
So what I did, because I didn't know this was happening, because I don't do my research. So I, and it was the only time, okay, not even true story. I was going to do the Camino de Santiago. This is how fluid my life is. I was going to do the Camino de Santiago and then do the Tour du Mont Blanc. And when I started doing research, everyone's like, no, October is too late. You got to go before. So that's what flipped my switch. And that's why I went before the Camino. Okay. So here I am. It's 100 miles. And I'm like, I can do this in a week. So let's do it.
Yeah.
So I didn't book my flight away though. I didn't want to put pressure on me until I knew I could finish. Well, sure enough, that day where all those runners go by me, 2,000, I just stopped. I kept stepping off the trail to let them by. But I mean, I don't think you understand how many 2,000 is. So I, at some point, it was a beautiful day. I set up my tent in the middle of the day overlooking a glacier right by the runners. Like, they're running past my thing. They were laughing because I just stopped. I said that they would stop by around 2 p.m. I waited for them to go, and then I started my trek again. Best decision I ever did. But again, I didn't have any reservations. I didn't have to be somewhere at a certain time. I took all those pressures off of me. I think when people hike, they put pressures on themselves. They put deadlines. They put financial. They do all this stuff, and they cause stress. I just did it recently on a hike I did, and it changes your vibe. It changes
how you.
Your decision-making process, it changes everything. So anyway, that was August. That was in August of this year. And then I did the Camino, but I did the Portuguese way. I wanted to do the whole thing. And most people start in this place called Porto. And I'm like, I don't want to do Porto. I want to start in Lisbon because, you know, I want to do the whole thing. Well, there's a reason people don't start in Lisbon. I thought it was because it was just long. No, if someone wants to do the Portuguese way, start in Tomar or Porto. Don't start in Lisbon. It's just not, you can go to Lisbon and get a rental car and drive it because it was almost completely a road walk. So you're not going to miss any of the trail by being in a car. Most people that I've started with, and I didn't know them until the day of, then I would get to the next stop and they were already there. And I'm like, they didn't pass me. How did they get there? They took the train. It was so ugly. People would hop on the train and just go to the next stop, enjoy the town, and then go to the next stop. So anyway, my quick advice for Camino de Santiago Portuguese is start in Tomar, or most people start in Porto. Okay.
That's cheating.
You know, so it's funny because we have this concept of hiking, like the Appalachian Trail. I was probably a close to the purest thing that you could be, and that's not necessarily a compliment, but I wanted to do it a certain way. I didn't want to miss anything. If I did a blue blaze, I came right back to where I was. You know, if I did a hike, and let's say it had a blue blaze, but you could loop around, or even a shelter. Sometimes you go in a shelter and then you go out the other way. No, I would go into the shelter, come back, and then go up. That's a purist. Okay. I had a struggle with the Camino because it's a pilgrimage. It's not a hike.
No.
So the concept, I mean, it's not my way of doing it. I could never do that, but it is the way. And like, even when this happened on my Camino recently, I follow the signs. They show you where the Camino is. People were standing at a decision point because you could see there was a road and you could see that the Camino would go like this by the ocean and then come back to the road. And people would look at it and they would go, nah. And so they would just stay by the road. Again, it's their Camino. They missed out on, like, some of my prettiest stuff was staying on the trail. Anyway,
right.
So that was the Camino. So then I come back to the US, and how did this even come about? I had time. So that's what always gets me in trouble. I had that wedding in November to go to. So I had a month. I'm like, what can I do for a month? And I came up with the Allegheny Trail. I had this weird idea. So a friend of mine did a fastest known time on a trail. And it kind of got me thinking, could I carry, I didn't care about the fastest known time, but they did it unsupported. Could I carry 2 weeks worth of food? No resupply. And I felt this was a very safe trail to do it on because there's a little cities along the way. There's roads. If something went south, no problem.
Right.
And it's, you know, near the Appalachian Trail. So there's going to be people. No problem. Okay. Well, I jump on the trail. Again, getting on the trail was the hardest part. I can only carry 2 weeks worth of food. So I have to do it fast. The only person who had done it on record was a guy. He did it supported, self-supported. So he could stop at the restaurants and he could buy or grab bottled water, whatever. I did unsupported, right. Where I could do that. But he did it in a little over 14 days. So I'm like, all right, 14 days. That's my time frame. That's my planning. So, you know, so I jump on that trail. Oh my gosh. My pack was so heavy. I take pride in my pack. I usually keep it around 20 pounds. This one was almost 30 pounds. That's a lot. I felt like I was doing the Appalachian Trail. My 20 pound pack in the 2020 was the same as my 28, 29 pound pack now. That my shoulders hurting, my just exhaustion. Anyway, so I got to re-experience how I felt when I first stepped on the Appalachian Trail. I finished it and I actually somehow set a record. I mean, I was going to set a record no matter what, because as long as I finished, because no female had been on record to do it. Nobody had done it self-support or unsupported. So I was going to be in the books for at least a day, no matter what. But oh, it was hard. And then that's it. That was really long, but that was 2020 Appalachian Trail to what? 2 weeks ago. The end.
And, and to the listeners, you now understand why I said legend.
You know, it's fun because there's little hikes in between there, like all the little, like Lassen Volcanic National Park. Oh my gosh, I never heard of that one. That's one of the main 63 national parks. It's unbelievable. The hiking is, you get to experience every volcano. So there's so many, the hike doesn't have to be long to be epic, right? You can have an epic day hike, my opinion. So.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the most important and really, for me, you know, the most interesting question, and we may have touched on it, maybe there's still some detail, but what kicked off this passion for you to live life and get outdoors, hiking and backpacking? And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today, and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.